Thursday, February the 9th, 1984, with Matt Sabitka at the 33rd Annual Sports Banquet of the St. Anthony's Catholic Club at Padua Academy. This is Matt Sabitka of the Padua Academy with Duke Snyder. Duke, what remembrances do you have of Ebbets Field?
Well, there are an awful lot of remembrances for me at Ebbets Field. I played my first Major League game in Ebbets Field. The first Major League game I ever saw, I participated in as a pinch hitter. And So Ebbets Field for me was actually where I was born and raised as far as baseball was concerned. It's my first major league ballpark, and we were there for some 10 to 12 years before the team moved out to California. And it was home for a lot of years. In fact, I'm going back to Brooklyn this weekend to a baseball memorabilia convention and meet and greet and sign autographs for a lot of Brooklyn fans.
I read somewhere, Duke, that when the Dodgers moved from Brooklyn out to L.A., that you actually cried. Then you cried some more when the old iron ball hit Ebbets Field. I guess it did a lot of other people, not only players, but fans.
Well, I think when the club moved to California, why, and they tore down Ebbets Field, why, they tore a little bit out of the hearts of all of us former Brooklyn Dodgers when they did that. And I was born and raised in Southern California, but still my roots were in Brooklyn all those years and all those great years that the Brooklyn Dodgers had. And all of a sudden to be those roots pulled up and rerooted in California, even though I was from Southern California, why, it was a sad occasion for all of us. And even though most of us were starting to get on the other side of our careers and some almost through, why, it was a sad day, and tears did come down my eyes. And when Barney Stein, who was a photographer in the New York area and been a photographer of the Dodgers for many years, sent us a picture, my wife and I got this picture of that big iron ball knocking down the right field fence. Why, it wasn't a happy day at all.
Did you read Roger Kahn's book, The Boys of Summer?
I read it, yes. There's also a TV version of it out, and I think the TV version is better than the book, because they go to each guy and they talk to each fellow about their lives during and after the days in Brooklyn. And the book, I think the story about the team is good, but some of the biographies could have been done a little bit better. But Roger's book did very well. I'm happy for him, and I wish that everybody could see the TV version of The Boys of Summer.
Duke, you played on under quite a few managers in the majors. I wonder if you can give me just a brief description or thought on a manager, as I mentioned a name, just something brief. As you recollect the name, it comes to your mind. You played under Bert Schotten, right?
Well, Bert Schotten, yes, he was actually my second major league manager, because Leo Durocher was with the ball club during spring training in my first year, and I got to know Leo fairly well. And then all of a sudden, Leo was suspended that year, and Bert Schotten was given the job. And I was under Bert for the first couple of months before they sent me out, which I needed to be sent out for more experience. But Bert was a Ricky man and an organization man, and he taught me an awful lot about the right way to play baseball.
About Charlie Dressen.
Well, Charlie was, I think, the best manager for me that I played for. He knew how to handle Duke Snyder. I was a moper, a pouter, and in my earlier days when I was having a bad day, I let it affect me. And Charlie Dressen knew how to get the most out of me and get me out of those little slumps that I went in mentally as well as physically. And Charlie was a heck of a baseball man. He would get me mad. And instead of, he would get on me in the clubhouse or on the bench or something like that, get me angry, and he got me to go out on the field and take it out on the opposing club instead of taking it out on Dressen or anybody else, why, or myself. Why, I became to where he could get me infuriated and I'd go out and be some kind of ball player. And that's the secret in managing, really, is to know what you have to do to motivate your players. Some don't need it, some do. Some need a pat on the back, some need to be chewed out, and to be able to know who needs what and to use it at the right time. And Dressen sure used it at the right time with me.
How about Walter Alston?
Well, Walter came along in 1954 and inherited a ball club that was an outstanding team. And Walt took him a year, I think, before he really got his feet on the ground as far as running the ball club. But he managed our first World Championship team in 1955 and just had good year after good year as a manager and adapted to his teams very well. I think if to put Walter Alston in a nutshell, he was stern when he had to be. He learned to manage, and as the years progressed, why, he progressed as a manager and ended up a Hall of Fame manager and really did an outstanding job.
Casey Stengel.
Well, he's a guy we didn't like because Casey was...
Well, you played under Casey, did you?
Well, what I mean by that is that he was a Yankee manager for several years when they beat us in World Series. And we respected him, but we didn't like him because he was always a winner and we were always finishing second in World Series till 55 when we finally won. And then I had the opportunity to play under Casey in 1963.
One year with the Mets.
With the Mets, and... I learned to love Casey Stengel.
Did you understand him?
Yes. That's when I knew, after 1 year with Stengel, I learned and understood Stengelese. I knew it was time to leave.
How about Leo DeRocher?
Leo is another guy that I think has been slighted as far as the Hall of Fame is concerned. He's an outstanding baseball man, and I feel that Leo should be in the Hall of Fame. He could take a team and do wonders with it like he did in 51 with the Giants. And once you put that uniform on, boy, I'll tell you, you not only had to beat the Giants, let's say, you had to beat DeRocher.
That's right. Didn't you play for Alvin Dark?
Yes.
Alvin was my final manager, and Alvin was...
With the Giants?
Yes, in San Francisco in 1964. And Alvin was a heck of a manager. A good manager. He had a few family problems that year that were interfering with his managing, but he got that all straightened out, and I learned an awful lot from Alvin Dark, and he's quite a guy.
Yeah, so many accomplishments, so many honors. Of which are you the most proud? I mean, that covers quite a few years, and all these accolades you got. Is there any one specific thing that you cherish the most of the many honors that you amassed over the years?
Well, see, the thing that we... as Dodgers were more concerned about than anything else was winning. And we didn't, we knew that if we won a pennant that most everybody on the team was going to have a pretty good year. So individual stats were not as important to us as the bottom line of winning a ball game. And we knew that opening day was just as important as the last game of the season because we had so many close finishes in all those years. So I think the ultimate, as far as our team was concerned, was winning a World's Championship.
I mean, how about you personally? I don't mean as a team. You personally won achievement. Now, you're in the Hall of Fame, and you won all these other honors going through the career. Is there any one thing that you value above everything else?
I value the 1955 World's Championship season.
Did they give rings at that time, 55 or not?
I have a ring at home. I don't wear it. It's the championship ring of 1955, and it to me is the ultimate as far as.
Well, the significance there is in the history of the Brooklyn Dodgers. That's the first World Series champion ever. I think there were in a number of World Series before them. That's the first time they ever won a championship, right? 1955.
It was my biggest thrill in 1955, and like I say, it was a team thing. More, I hit four home runs in the World Series and had a great year at the bat and in the field and helped contribute to that World's Championship. And so I think overall, as a team and as an individual, that was the most satisfying year that any of us ever had.
Any regrets, Duke?
Not really. I made a lot of mistakes. I had to learn not to mope and not to pout and what have you. And I had to learn a lot of things about myself and what it was to be a man. And you know, when I was a youngster, I excelled in all athletics that I participated in. I really didn't know what failure was until I finally got to the big leagues and were playing against all these top players. And I became a failure so many times that it frustrated me. And I had to learn that I was going to strike out 90 to 100 times a year. And every time I struck out, that meant one less, and not let that last at-bat, when I struck out, affect my next at-bat. These are things that I had to learn to become a much better ball player. So I really don't have any regrets. There were things that I would have done differently than I did years ago, but you have no control over that when you're going through it.
Duke, I think you've mulled a little bit. You used to be a volatile guy. Wasn't there one incident when you and Don Zimmer were involved in before a game with the Cubs, see if you could throw the ball over the Coliseum, through the furthest, you had a little bet on that?
Well, see, people remember those things more than they remember a lot of other things.
Well, they remember the other things, too.
Whenever there's some little adversity involved, people seem to remember that Zimmer had a bet with these fellows, and it was a $400 bet, and then he told me he'd give me half of the action if I'd throw a ball out of the Coliseum. Well, I did. I attempted to, and in my third throw, I hurt my elbow, and I couldn't play that night. So I was sent home and fined $200 a day until I played. So I played the very next day, and my arm hurt me, and I got a couple hits in the ball game. Had to throw a couple runners out, but it was very painful. So I told him to keep the bet open, and the last day of the season, I threw a ball out of the Coliseum, so I got my $200 fine back. And then during the winter, why, Buzzy Bavese, who was the president of the ball club at the time, he gave me my $200 fine back. So I still made out all right. But we did a lot of crazy things, and we had a lot of fun. And we were a very close bunch of guys. And we had fun not only as a team, but off the field. We did so many great things that helped us become the team we were.
What was the reaction among the Dodgers when Jackie Robinson joined the ball club?
Well, that was my first days with the ball club, too. And Jackie was a tremendous athlete out in Southern California. When I was in junior high school, he was going to UCLA and Pasadena City College. And I idolized the man as an athlete. So when Jackie joined the ball club, I was tickled to death to be on the same team with Jackie. But there were some fellas from the South that really didn't like it too well, and they had a petition going around to sign that you wouldn't play if Jackie was on the team. Well, no way I would sign it, and very few signed it. In fact, the guys that did sign it, three or four, well, they were traded almost immediately from the ball club. But Jackie went through hell, I'll tell you, and held up very well under very adverse conditions.
Do you have occasion to keep in touch with any of the Dodgers, especially from the 55 club? I think it was Junior Gillian played second base, Gil Hodges, Roy Campanella, Preacher Rowe, any of those players. Do you have any occasion to run across, your paths cross, or you keep in touch or correspond or anything from 55 team?
Well, we see each other a couple of times during the year at an old-timers game, and now they're having these adult baseball camps in the fall. And quite a few of us were down in Vero Beach last October and had a lot of fun in that. But we do see each other quite often, and it's a lot of fun. We had more fun probably at the adult baseball camp than the adults that paid their money to come down had. But we're going to another one. When I say we, I'm talking about my wife and I are going to another one. And it's like old home week for us down there for a week at Vero Beach, putting these adults through their paces, and it's fun. But we see each other. I see Pee Wee quite often. I see Erskine several times during the course of the year. I see Newcomb, Campanella, and it's a matter to where you see quite a few. Stop by and see Preacher Rowe every once in a while in his hometown, and it's gotten to be to a point where we do see each other at least a couple of times during the year.
Do you follow Major Leagues today? I mean, do you go out to the games personally at all?
I don't have to, because I broadcast for the Montreal Expos, and I'm at every game.
Well, you're still there. You had a radio job first, right? I don't get the games here in Wilmington area, but I remember you used to do a broadcast first on radio.
Well, I broadcast 3 years with San Diego.
Right, San Diego Padres.
And then I went to Montreal, and I've been there 11 years now. So I see a lot of spring training games. I did the League Championship Series last year for CBS Radio and did the All-Star Game for CBS Radio. And so I'm involved in an awful lot of baseball. In fact, I've been now in Major League Baseball for 40 years.
What else do you do? Do you have any other avocation or vocation? Didn't you raise avocados at one time?
Well, I did. I sold my avocado ranch. I really don't have time to do too much because my job, as it is really not a job. I'm doing something I love. I'm in professional baseball and talking about the game I love. And the only tough part about it is being away from home as much as I am. But I get home and I have a couple of grandchildren now. In fact, I have another one coming in April. It'll be our third one. My oldest daughter is getting married in August. So I'm more or less wrapped up in my family and my grandchildren at this particular time in life. I'm getting close to 60 years old. So my wife and I do some traveling. We're going to New Zealand next fall for a month. So we keep awfully busy.
You enjoy going to banquets like this, Duke?
I do. I enjoy meeting all the people that are involved and congratulate a guy like Joe Altobelli, who's a manager of a World Championship team. And the last time I saw Joe, he fell off a stage in Baltimore just before he became the manager. Right, right. And I felt for him pretty bad about that. But I do get to see people in my profession and in other professions. I'm very anxious to meet Dan Marino, who I think had just did a fantastic job for Miami last year. And I watched him in college football. So it's a thrill for me to meet and see Dom DiMaggio again and see all these guys and be able to sit down and go one-on-one with Willie Moscone and guys like that.
How is Duke Snyder like to be remembered when they write the history of baseball, history of life? How would you like to be remembered?
Well, I think I would hope that I would be remembered as a good all-around ball player, not just a home run hitter or not just a RBI man, but also a fine defensive ball player and the type of guy that would do just about anything he had to do to win a ball game.
One final question. What was the top salary you made, Duke?
I don't know.
I think according to print, you can't go by that. It was all estimated, something like $45,000. And that was in a different era as compared to today. I don't know, today you're probably worth probably pulling down a million.
Well, I think salary-wise, probably that's pretty close. I think probably $48,000 and a new Cadillac.
Duke, I want to thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, Matt. Thank you.